Mitzvah Ha'ben Ha'av, and specifically the Mitzvah of Milah. So we had seen that there were different answers in Rishonim as to why our sugya needs a special pasuk for Mitzvah Milah to say that it's only shaykh to men. And it's already interesting, we noted the direction the question comes from, because we could have said, well, I know this already, simply because women are not b'toras bris milah. So if they don't have a bris milah themselves, so perhaps that should automatically tell you they're not chayiv to take that on for anyone else, which is a similar structure that we find with other mitzvos, whether in absolute sense or in a general sense. Sometimes we find an absolute exclusion of one who is not in a mitzvah from having a fundamental role in it. We find that sometimes in shlichus, in a ksiva sefer Torah perhaps, in tefillin and things like that. It's always a discussion. Again, sometimes it's more absolute, sometimes it's less absolute. But the idea that somebody who's not themselves chayiv in a mitzvah, that should therefore also imply that they're not responsible for bringing the mitzvah about with others, that's an established idea in many other areas of halacha, so it's interesting that that's not what the Rishonim are basing themselves on for the most part here. We did mention the Meiri, the first day of the sugya, where the Meiri says that that's the background of this whole section of Gemara, that all of these are mitzvos that women aren't liable for themselves, and that's why they're not chayav for their sons. Although then that prompts the question why indeed the Gemara proceeds to get all of these from other places for the most part. But in any event, so what the Rishonim are bothered by is a different question, mitzvah sasei shehazman grama. Why do we not say that Mila is a mitzvah sasei shehazman grama? And we saw Tosfos here asking that question, the Rashash having an interesting expansion on Tosfos, but basically saying here that, well, it's not actually a mitzvah say shehazman grama, because once you enter into not bizmana brisin, then the zman goes on forever, including an aspect that's not lahalacha that says that it could even be done at night. And that's not how we assume. So that's one approach in Rishonim, but we saw also that there is an approach which the Tosfos Rid expresses, really the Ritva says something similar, that we're not talking about the Maisa Mila here. We're not talking about saying the mother is obligated to do the cutting, which, yes, that is set to a certain time. We're talking about making sure the bris happens. And the arrangements and other details that are necessary to do that, that is around the clock. That could be done at any time. And therefore, one could have thought that women are indeed chayavos in this, kamash malan, that they're not. But not all the Rishonim worked off that assumption. Because we mentioned that if you want to say we're talking about the actual cutting, so it should be even more likely that women are not chayavos in that. And in fact, Tosfos in Avodah Zarah asked that question, because Tosfos says that according to one opinion, women are not even ksheros lamul. Now, we don't have paskin like that either. We assume that at least b'dieved, women are ksheros lamul, as we find in the Torah with Tzipora. But there is an opinion in the Gemara that women are not ksheros lamul. So Tosfos asks, well then, why do I need to pata them from this mitzvah over here in Kedusha? So you see that Tosfos' assumption in Avodah Zarah is that we're talking about the cutting. Otherwise, we could have answered the question more easily. Zed?
Where's the
Tosfos in those Chav Zayin. So let's try to figure out a little bit more with that background. What exactly is the nature of the Chiyuv Mila in general, and the Chiyuv Mila specifically here, and this idea that our Gemara tells us that it's not just on the father, it's also on Beis Din, and eventually on the child himself when he ceases to be a child, when he grows up. So one of the major issues to figure out is the role of Karis. We know that Mila is a almost unique mitzvah because it has a punishment. They say almost unique. Unique is supposed to be, if you want to know some English grammar, unique is supposed to be an absolute term. You're either unique or not. You can't be very unique. Unique means by definition it's the only one. So it's supposed to be an absolute term. But there's one other. So there's two mitzvos, the two positive mitzvos that have a onesh associated with it, and that other one is Korban Pesach. So we mentioned the other day also a suggestion of the Sfas Emes that that's the answer to the question, that the onesh shows that it is treated like a lo saseh. And all those saseh's women are chayavos. Although it's really interesting to think why that should matter for this, which is something to think about when we get more into Mitzvah as Mangrama. But in any event, so Mila has an onesh. So the question is, when does that onesh kick in? When does the Chi of Karis kick in? So this was a machlokas between the Rambam and the Raivid. You saw that? Right, it's also, did I put Tosfos and Makos on the Marmakomos? Right, so it's also the 2 days in Tosfos and Makos. So what are the two positions here?
Every day,
right?
When you die and you're not fulfilled.
Right, so which is which? So the Rambam holds...
you have to do it before you die.
Right. Okay, so that's basically correct, but there's something that was said a little bit imprecisely. So, and you'll forgive me, but I'm just going to zero in on it because it may be a key point. So, do you mind if I ask you to repeat how you formulated the Rambam's position?
The Rambam, you have to fulfill the mitzvah before you die.
So what might be said a little bit more sharply, no pun intended, about that sentence? Not yet what I'm looking for, actually. Jed? Sorry? Also not.
It has to have been removed.
Also not. All right, so you're in good company because no one's hit on it yet. Basically, because this may be the key to the Rambam's position. Right? So the Rambam's position is that the Chi of Karis comes when you die, without a milah. And the Raivid says, what? Basically, right, who? Why does he have to make such a limit? And Tosfos and Makos has essentially both statements. So one approach to why the Rambam says this is because he is trying to define what's essentially anomalous. Right? There's something that is a little bit difficult here. And the truth is, this is something which the Gemara addresses in a different context. And I'll explain what I mean. The question of, we know that mitzvos in general, positive mitzvos, don't have onshin in the Torah for the most part. With, like we just said, Mila and Pesach being the notable exceptions. Mitzvos lo saseh often have onshin. And that's where we get the whole ability to figure out what's more chomer than the other. So, think about it for a second. Why would you say that is? Is that only because lo saseis are more chomer? Or is there anything else that might be a part of that puzzle? Okay, Jonah looked like he had a thought, but other hands beat him to it. So, Morty, up first?
Lo saseis, once you do it, you've automatically done the wrong thing.
Oh, okay, so that could be the crux of the issue, right? Or could be relevant to the issue. But maybe it's not just that there's a greater chumrah to lo saseis. It's that lo saseis are much easier to identify when you're in trouble. I know that when I committed the lo saseh, I've done something wrong. But a mitzvah saseh, it gets a little harder to pin down a moment. So the Rambam essentially is dealing with the fact that there's something a little awkward here. That, yes, he probably agrees, or possibly at least agrees with other Rishonim, that there is an Aveira involved in being without a Bris Milah. But the question is, how do we pin that down? How do you say that, okay, now you're in trouble? So the only way he can formulate it, or a way he feels compelled to formulate it, is, well, if your life ends, then you know you've run out of time. But until then, we can't call it a bitul aseh. So that's why I was picking on your formulation before, because to say the Rambam says you have to do it before you die, sounds like you mean he's saying you have to do the bris milah sometime before you die. And that's why all the other suggestions about how to define the bris milah wasn't necessarily the point. Because the Rambam presumably agrees you have to do it immediately. But the question is to try to identify when there's an onish kares. When do we say that that's taken effect? So then we have a difficult time trying to understand when that should be. So therefore he has to say, okay, well, if you die and you haven't done it, then you're in trouble. So that's interesting on a couple of levels. Because that could also give us something to think about whether that defines the mitzvah of milah differently. And what I said before about there being another passage in the Gemara talks about in Makkos and Exubus and a few other places, the Gemara asks about the question of lav hanitak laseh, that sometimes there are averos, which are active averos, but they are apparently fixable somehow. There's something you can do later that will negate them. Speaking very imprecisely because it's a little bit of a complicated sugya and there are different categories, but let's say to give what may or may not be a good example just for the sake of speed, so let's say if you stole money, so there's no malchus for stealing because you can return the money, so that's lav hanitak laseh, lav hanitak l'teshlumin, whatever it is. So the Gemara tries to figure out, so when would you be considered in violation of that? When does the time expire when you haven't corrected it yet? So there's an inherent difficulty in that. Whenever you're dealing with a responsibility rather than a prohibition, how do we pin down the time? Okay, now we can say, now you didn't do it. So for some mitzvahs, maybe you can say, all right, if it's very time dependent, then you can say, matzah, I know, if Pesach night passes and I didn't eat matzah, that's when I didn't do it. But other mitzvos, it's not always so clear. So maybe that's a little bit of a clue here. The fact that there's an onesh, and this is an interesting line of thinking, I think, to pursue, that what if you said the fact that there's an onesh for Mila isn't only a statement of its severity, oh, it's unusually severe, mitzvah saseh, and that's why there's an onesh. Maybe the fact that there's an onesh tells us something about the mitzvah itself. But it's not just something that you need to do, and you didn't get to it. So that's an interesting thought to keep in mind. So, within that, let's try to explore also, so what is the nature of this machlokas? Is it about the nature of bris milah, or is it about something else? The question of the mitzvah, where the onesh comes from. And you should just know that you think, okay, this isn't really so halacha l'maisa, because either way, you should get the bris milah taken care of, so it's nafka mina in shamayim when the onesh kicks in and when it doesn't kick in. But this actually was the topic of a huge machlokas about 100 years ago. Still not necessarily something that played out, but Shaila Lamaisa was a very, very controversial psak of the Dvar Avram. If you're familiar with the Dvar Avram, he was Talmud Chacham from Kovno. Again, we owe him a special Hakar Satov here. I think I've mentioned this in the past because he was the one who officially, here we should say now, the week of the Chag HaSmicha, he was the one who gave Smicha to Rav Soloveitchik, because Rav Soloveitchik, when he came to America, needed some kind of certificate that he was a rabbi. So the Dvar Avraham wrote him a letter, and the letter, which you can read, is printed in the Sefer Zichron Harav. It says there, Halacha Kamosa B'chol Mokom. So in any event, the Dvar Avram has that was not as controversial as what we're about to quote now. So he has a tshuva, which is printed in the Sefer Dvar Avram. It's in Chelek Aleph. I believe it's around Siman Lamed Gimel, somewhere around there, where he talks about the following shaila. Let's say you have somehow two babies that you have to give a bris milah to. What exactly is a situation where there's two baby boys are both your responsibility? It's a fair question, but let's say, just take that as a given right now, you have two baby boys you have to give a bris milah to. So, one of them is 8 days old. The other one is more than 8 days old. You're going to do both right now, back to back. Which bris do you do first? What would you say? Yes, Jacob?
So if you're following the Rabbit and you understand that you don't be on this every second of every day, you're living in violation.
Mm-hmm.
If one is more than 8 days, because the one who's on his 8th day is not violated anything yet, and you wait another hour on the 8th day, it seems there's no issue. So the only issue that's happening right now is one that's more than 8 days.
So all right, so we're watching this history play out here, because you would be very appreciated by the Dvar Avram, because that's essentially exactly what he says. But Jed shaking his head.
I'm just so confused. You said that it's an 8 day one, 8 day old.
Yes, you have two babies. Right, which is why I said it's also you have to figure out what the scenario is, because it's not a father with twins, right? Because he can't, I mean, they're different ages apparently, at least different days. Theoretically, they could be born on the border, but seems unlikely that they're twins. Man could have two wives, you know, whatever. Somehow, it's your responsibility to both of these persons. So you're not disagreeing with Jacob when you're shaking?
If the older one is going to be 13 soon and then he's going to be encouraged, then yeah. But if it's just if it's going to be 13 in like 5 years or in 10 years, then I would think there's little difference.
So you think there's no difference, but it's a toss-up. Babies are really going to cry if you truss them up. But you're saying that
that's... Well, in 8 days, you should do it because that's the obligation for... There's a special thing in 8 days.
Oh.
So it's better to do that one.
Okay. So this is good. You guys are playing out this debate as it took place. Jonah?
So I think the Kri Moshe says like Jacob Sachs, but if I'm not mistaken, if you read the actual Lashon on the right, that Chol Yom Vayom, so it doesn't really matter.
Every day is one entity.
Yeah, Chol Yom Vayom is when you're reviving.
Okay, so that's assuming that it's literal, but it could be. It could be. Yeah, maybe it is literal. But essentially, so the Dvar Avraham said exactly like Jacob said, right? That it's worse to delay the older baby than the younger baby, because the older baby is chayiv karis every second. And the younger one, once you're on the 8th day, there's no difference between 9 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock in the morning for the 8-day-old baby, because the whole day is the same mitzvah. It's just that it's reason makdim the mitzvah, so we try to do it at the earliest possible time. But there's no fundamental difference. So that is the position of Dvar Avraham exactly. However, many, many disagreed with him. So, for example, the Sefer Marcheshes, he has a tshuva against this. Marcheshes was in Henech Egish. And the Sefer Zecher Yitzchak, the Zecher Yitzchak was with Itzel Panavizher. He disagrees with this. And if you look in the first couple of essays in Chelek Beis, the Dvar Avram, so it's like letters to the editor, he's responding to detractors, to those who argued with him about this. So there were a lot of others who felt that this was not correct. So why? For various reasons, but similar to what Jed was saying, that essentially they didn't think that the Ravid meant this, whether it's exactly like Jonah said or whether it's something else, but they mean to say that every second there is a new Chiyuv Karetz. And that being the case, so there are reasons to do the 8-day-old baby first, either because that is the time of the mitzvah, And we also have a rule that anything that is bizmano is considered to be mekudesh more. The more something is timely, the more it is holy. And that's one of the rules of Kedimas, that kol ha-mekudesh mechavero, kodum mechavero, whatever is holier comes first. So for various reasons, there was very vehement objection to the Dvar Avraham's position. Yes?
Well, we are talking about that the older baby is going to be the age that is Kishiyedal. We're talking about a case for the older baby.
No, a baby. I mean, it's just not a bar mitzvah. Eventually it'll be bar mitzvah. So just the idea, what the Ravid seems to be suggesting is that there is a avera that is incurring extra curiositude every second, and therefore the clock is ticking with more ferocity on this baby than it is on the 8-day-old baby.
Every second past the 8th day, or every second past the
13th? So every second past the 8th day, it seems.
Oh, every second.
Yeah. Even though the question is, there's no actual curious on him, presumably. So here, in order to say this whole idea, you have to take the existence of an onesh as not necessarily the reality of an onesh, presumably, but that an onesh indicates some kind of avera. So if every second he's theoretically chayiv kares, even though he's not going to get this bill until he's an adult, so it's suggesting that there is a avera going on. Now, what's also complicated here, and this may also be part of the objection, is what we just said the past minute shows a little bit the awkwardness of this. The kares is only relevant to the nimol himself. The father, or the bezdin, is never subject to the chiyuv kares. Right, so why is that? Sorry? Right, so the pasuk, the pasuk is a part of it, right? That the chi of kares is derived from the pasuk, correct? But it also reflects something about the nature of the chiyuv. So some understand, maybe everyone understands, but some point this out, that there is a fundamental difference between the chiyuv of mila on the nimo and the chiyuv on the father and the bezdin. That the father and the bezdin, their chiyuv is to make sure that it happens. While on the child, he has an obligation to actually make sure it's a bris mila. So the chiyuv kares only goes to that chiyuv. While the bezdin chiyuv is about simply making sure there's no oral in their community and making sure it happens. So there's no chiyuv kares associated with that obligation. Follow? Okay, the chiyuv kares that comes with bittul mila, that comes with bittul, the act of mila, that somebody who negates the maisa mila itself, that's where there's a chiyuv kares. The chiyuv that's on bezdin is to make sure that it happens, to make sure that there's no orel in their community. They're responsible for addressing the state of orla in their kehila. So it's a different chiyuv. That chiyuv is not associated with any chiyuv kares. So the chiyuv kares that's potential here is only for the child. But here it gets a little complicated too. That the father, on the one hand, is like Bezdin. He's also responsible to make sure that it happens. But while his son is a katan, he takes on the chiyuv of the son. That's what it means, mitzvah saban al ha'av. So therefore, he is responsible in a more direct sense. But that responsibility will transfer once his son becomes a bar mitzvah. So therefore, the chi of karis, just for technical reasons, never attaches to the father either. Because until the son becomes bar mitzvah, the chi of karis is never real. And once the son becomes bar mitzvah, it's not his chi of anymore. So the chi of karis here is only by the nimol himself. The RL himself in that case. Yes, sir?
I'm just a little confused that, so we're now talking about once you bar mitzvah, the chi of karis is chal.
Right.
We had said before that the chi of karis is chal at 8 after
gate. Right, so what that sounds like that means is that there's an aveira that is chai of karis, an aveira that is roi for karis. But it doesn't actually have a reality to it. No one's actually subject to the onesh. Because the baby is not an adult yet, and the concept of karis as an onesh here doesn't apply to Bezdin or to the father.
But there still is some punishment.
Right, so that's what you have to say, that the what derived by mentioning that is he's saying that there is an aveira that is generating karis. Now, when this child becomes 25, so he'll have, if he dies at 25, let's say, or not, he'll have a chi of karis from all these times beforehand. Sounds like what the Ravid is getting at is that there is an aveira that is ticking, even though the actual karis is not feasible. So the Sefer HaMakne over here writes based on this idea that when we exclude the mother, so we're excluding her only from the chiyuv mila, and as our Mishnah says, from the mitzvahs ha-ben al ha-av. So, really, the child is chayv in his own mila. But because he's 8 days old and can't do anything, so it's the father's responsibility. And our Mishnah and our Gemara tell us that the mother is exempt from that. She's not chayv the way her husband is. But, says the Sefer HaMakne, it doesn't mean that she's totally out of the picture. What does the chi of Bezdin mean? Does it mean specifically the three Yari Yadin ordained rabbis? So Bezdin is a way of saying the community. The community, as represented through Bezdin, should take care of making sure the bris milah happens. So really, it means everybody. So Sefer HaMakne writes that the mother has that level chiyuv here too. That just like the whole community is responsible to make sure that this baby has a bris, so the mother's responsibility is no less as far as that's concerned. It's just the specific chiyuv haben al ha'av, the idea that the father takes on the chiyuv, that doesn't become transferred to the mother. Okay? It's an interesting idea. So let's consider a little bit more. So this idea that there is a question here, which some of you alluded to, as to what is the nature of the obligation of bris milah. Is the bris milah to make sure that there is no arla, even when we look to the person himself? Or is it specifically the Maisa HaMitzvah? And there are those who suggest, Rav Yosef Engel actually has a tshuva about this, I don't think we've quoted Rav Yosef Engel's tshuvas too often, we've mentioned him from many of his other svarim, but he has a sefer of shalos and tshuvas called Ben Paras. So in the tshuvas Ben Paras, he has a discussion about this, or maybe you could say that this is the issue between the Rambam and the Ravid. That, and this goes to the question we said before about the anomaly, that if we're just talking about an action, you have to do an action. So then, it's taka hard to pin down when have you not done the action. When are you in trouble for not doing it? So to that, you can say that you're in trouble for not doing it when you die without doing it, because otherwise maybe you'll do it someday. How do we ever determine that you are in bittul of this action? But if you see it more as an issue of not being an RL, so then it's easier to say that every moment you're an RL, you're doing something wrong. And perhaps that's in the background of this issue. So what other issues are affected by this question? What other factors come into play when we try to consider, is the issue the maisa mila, or is it the state of not being an RL?
Whether you're born.
Okay, so one question is nolad mol, right? So nolad mol, the din is that we require a hatafas dam bris for nolad mol. But if somebody is born without a bris mila, so we still do some kind of a surgery on him. So there, taka, we will discuss this in more detail. So it's a question, why do we do that? So it could be because we're not sure if he really is completely mol. So the suffix arla kvushta, that we're concerned that maybe there really is an arla there and we just can't perceive it. So maybe we have to do a bris mila anyway. Or it could be that no, we know there's no arla, and really this person is, for all intents and purposes, mohol. But maybe there has to still be some maisa connected with it, and therefore Hatafas Dam Bris addresses that. What else? What other possibilities could be affected by this question? Can you think of anything else? Okay, right, so there's also a discussion. What if somebody undoes the bris, whatever effect that actually has? So that we know is an Isser. The Gemara calls that Moshe Cholaso. But it's a question, if you saw the Tosus, right, Tosus and Yuvamos, whether that is an Isser Darais or an Isser Darabana. And could we go so far as to say that it undoes the Mila completely, if the whole idea is that it's a Maisa Mila? So right, he had the Maisa Mila, who cares what happens later? But if the issue is a person is supposed to not be an RL, then it could be that you could taka revert to a state of RL, and maybe that's why there is a more serious issue here. Did you end up before?
It's nice to
have that. Okay.
Just on the deer that had their bris before they converted.
Uh-huh.
They do another symbolic type thing, similar to the baby that was born with that.
Okay. Now, it's interesting. This is also something that maybe we'll have to come back to. There's an interesting discussion in Rabbi Yaakov Emden and elsewhere. We have to figure out whether the chi of bris for a ger is the same as the chi of bris for a Jewish baby boy. And that opens up other possibilities. Do we say that the chi of bris is a part of gerus? Or is it the same as tumila? It's just that now that he's Jewish, he needs the mila that he would have needed if he was born. There is a fascinating discussion. There's a famous Dvar Avram about this also, a different Dvar Avram, Chelek Gimel, where there's a discussion. The Gemara says that if a woman converts while she's pregnant, who barish in a skyra, so the Gemara says that she does not, when the son is born, he doesn't need tvila. Normally a ger needs tvila, so here he doesn't. So it's a question, what does that mean? The Rishonim discuss what that means. Does that mean that he doesn't need tefillah because he's born Jewish? It converts, he's born from a Jewish mother, so that's why she converted while she was pregnant. And even though he may have been conceived before that, but Lamaisa is born from a Jewish mother, so that's why there's no tefillah. Or do we say that no, he doesn't need tefillah because he had tefillah. When his mother converted, she had tefillah, and he was inside, he was a part of her body, so therefore he has tefillah, and it's a tefillah l'shem geirus. So then the question is, so if the son's essentially a ger, so then do we say that the tefillah counted for him before he was born? And the bris mila that happens afterwards is a milas geirus, and the Mila's baby at the same time, and it's out of order, because normally you have to have the bris before the tefillah. So now, if this is really a tefillah of Geiris, and it's a bris of Geiris, so it's out of order, so the Rishonim discussed that. There was a hand up before? Yes?
Also, there may be certain dina in terms of this, other maybe certain dina where an RL can't take part in that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this not works, but also by the Ram Trumos system.
Right, and we had a Nakuda about that. Right, so the question, how should this affect other dinim, where there is a shame RL, is also an issue. So one question also to figure out, this is a question of Halacha L'maisa, which is an ongoing issue. Yeah? Sorry? Shlichus is one. I was going to mention another one, but let's talk about Shlichus for a second if we bring it up. So Shlichus is an ongoing issue that we saw there was a difference here between father and son, that the Or Zeruah says you really can't use shlichus for a bris because it's a mitzvah of the father and a mitzvah shavagufo. He's got to do it, so therefore if he's at all able to do it, he shouldn't let anyone else do it. And this, by the way, is where that shach and the ketzos that somebody said you haven't seen yet comes up, so maybe I'll let you see that before we'll say a little more detail about that next time. But Marach Or Zeruah, the Or Zeruah's son, so he disagrees with his father, and again, I don't know if there's any history there in terms of his own bris, or who knows, but he said that you can have a shliach there, that it's a mitzvah, it's in tachlis, it's in the result, so therefore, as long as you have the result, then it doesn't matter, and this Marach Or Zeruah essentially is the same position as the Tosas Rid that we mentioned before, that as long as you're bringing about the bris milah, that's the nature of the chiyuv of the parent, and of the chiyuv at all, and that's why we needed a pasuk to tell us that women are pturos. So this was a big discussion. It's a shach, it's a ksav sofer, it's others, that nowadays most of us assume that we certainly should use a shliach for bris milah, unless we are very professional and experienced ourselves. But this was a discussion, and it goes to the question of what exactly is the nature of the mitzvah. That if it's result-based, then for sure it should work through someone else. But if it's a din in the ma'isa hamila, then maybe it's not going to be effective having somebody else do it. Hi. Yeah, that's why it sounds like there's a little bit of an issue with the position of the machmirim here, because the machmirim, even though those who are most machmir, they say that you shouldn't let someone else do it unless you absolutely can't. So the question is, well, why should that be okay at all? I mean, if it's shlichut doesn't work, then it doesn't work. So having somebody else do it shouldn't be possible at all. Unless you want to say that, which is also possible, that even the machmirim here really see there to be two goals. One, to make sure he's not narl, and two, to do the ma'isa mila yourself. So they're saying that if it's absolutely impossible, so what can you do? All right, so you're mafkir that, you lose your mafsid that mitzvah. But you still have to have the bris mila done anyway, because the son can't be an narl. So maybe that's what they mean, that you'll lose out a major part of it by having somebody else do it, but still, if that's the only way it's going to happen, then you have to have somebody else do it. But in Maisa, it's not the kiyum of this mitzvah at all, in that sense. So that's a question. Another issue that Poskin discussed is the question of anesthesia, let's say for an adult. So can you be unconscious during your bris milah? So it's the adult minimolim who davka are going to care about this, right? Babies don't ask about it, although it's a discussion. The discussion of anesthesia for babies is also a discussion for various reasons. But one of the issues that is relevant is mitzvah srichas kavana. Do you need to have kavana for the mitzvah while it's happening? So if we're dealing with an 8-day-old baby, so it's a mitzvah la'av, so presumably the kavana has to be for the father, the bezdin, whoever is doing it. But the question of what if it's an adult doing it? So then does he have a chiyuv of kavana, or a chiyuv to be aware while it's happening? So that could affect the question of anesthesia. Can he be out cold when it's happening? And if this is the only issue, so then this creates a distinction between local anesthesia and general anesthesia, which both have their own issues addressed with them. But one of the questions is, if it's general anesthesia, a person is knocked out cold, so should we say that that's a problem because mitzvah srichas kavanah? Or do we say, no, there's no mitzvah srichas kavanah here. If you have, there's no need for it, it's all about not being an RO, and if you have orla removed, so then it doesn't matter, kavanah, no kavanah, awake, asleep, it all accomplishes the same thing. So that's the thing also, so it's one related issue, because you could make a good case that even if you do say, like you're alluding to, that mitzvah srichas kavana, that you can establish the kavana in ways that don't necessarily require you to be awake beforehand. It gets into the question, which is actually a good Pesach topic, what exactly do we mean by kavana? And does kavana necessarily mean that you're thinking about it at the moment, or does it mean that we need to clarify the mitzvah is not incidental, and the like? You could probably make a case that it's not necessarily going to require you to be awake at the time. But this is one of the issues that comes up in this question of anesthesia. So another issue that is relevant to this, according to some, has to do with the question of nidr. So I think what we'll do in the interest of time is that I'll set this question up and then we'll leave it as a cliffhanger and we'll start with this next time and then we'll explain the different nuances of it. So again, in terms of our scheduling here, so we don't know yet, weather permitting, whether our next year is tomorrow or Wednesday. So we'll continue this whatever time the weather allows us. But I'll just set up this issue and then we'll see the different ins and outs of it when we resume. So the question is, there is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos in Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, which you've hopefully seen from the Maariv Chamos, where the Gemara talks about the concept of Hidur Mitzvah in general. Every day we say in Davening, Zeh Keliv Yonvehu, this is my God and I will glorify him, according to one reading in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, how do you glorify God? We should do mitzvos in a beautiful way. So apparently in the context of Bris Mila, there's such a thing as well, the Gemara tells us, that there is a way to do Bris Mila that is minimally yotze, and there is a better way. There's a way that cuts off more, what's called the tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin, and that is a more complete fulfillment of the mitzvah bris mila. So that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to cut not only the tzitzin hama'akvin, the part that if you don't do this, the bris is no good, but you're supposed to go further than that and kind of cut also the tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin. So in that context, the Gemara says that hamal, somebody who's doing a bris mila, so when he's in the middle of the bris, chozer bein al tzitzin hama'akvin bein al tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin, then he should make sure to do all of it, to do it the Mohudr way. But if he finished the bris already, but we see something is undone, so then if it's ma'akvin, if it's the part that is ma'akiv, then he has to go back, he has to fix that. But if it's the hidr mitzvah, so then we don't go back. Well, it's this in she'eno ma'akvin, you're not chosen. So the question is, why not? The hidr mitzvah is important too. So why shouldn't you go back and do that as well? So most of the Rishonim, Rashi, Tosfos, Natur, and the Ramah, most assume that the reason you're not going back is why? Because it's Shabbos, right? This is a sugya appears in the Sefer Shabbos, and that the issue is that it's already a surprise that you're doing a bris mila on Shabbos at all. But that's the din, you do it bris mila even on Shabbos. So maybe you can think that, or maybe that's indeed the case, that Shabbos, we don't have the same latitude. And if you have to go back in and cut some more, on Shabbos, we're only going to allow that if it is ma'akev as a milah, if it's something that without this the milah is no good. But to allow you to go and make a new cut on Shabbos for something that's just a hinder mitzvah, so that we can't permit. So that's how most of the Rishonim understand it. And the Tshuva's Pri Yitzchak, the mitzvah of Blazer, he has a tshuva about this, and he writes to prove that he thinks this view on the Rishonim is correct. But the problem is, the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam in Hilchos Milah in Perek Beis, Halacha Yud Aleph, the Rambam says this din that on Tzitzin She'ena Ma'akvin, you don't go back. And he doesn't say you're talking about Shabbos. He's talking about a bris meal on any day. Whatever day this bris takes place, you don't go back on the Tzitzin She'ena Ma'akvin. So the question is, why not? If it's not Shabbos, what's the issue? So this was a big discussion, many has Beirim. It's often quoted, very creative application of the Briska Rav here, where he connects this to Hilchos Chanukah. And it could have other implications, so we'll have to pick up with that. So just to quickly recap what we talk about. So we talked a little bit more about the Chiyuv on the Ben Hala'av, about the different levels of the Bezdin, of the Av, possibly of the mother. The mother could also maybe be in the context of Bezdin. We talked about the issue with figuring out when the Onish Karis kicks in, how that could be a fundamental issue, Stam, and having an Onish for Mitzvah Saseh. We talked about how that could be behind the Machlokas, the Rambam, and the Raivid, and various complexities there, and how maybe the fact of an Onish itself tells us something about this Mitzvah that is relevant. And then we talked about how this could also connect to the question of whether it's a mitzvah of cutting or a mitzvah of making sure there's no orla. And we talked about some possible nafkaminas of this, including the question of shlichus, including the possible question of the status of orla for other things, including the question of mila under anesthesia, and also including this question that we started now, the issue of hiddur, why should it be that, I haven't explained how it connects, but the question of why the Gemara says that hiddur you don't go back for, and most of Rishon say you need to go back on Shabbos, but if it's not Shabbos, why shouldn't you? And yet, indeed, that's the view of the Rambam, that if it's not Shabbos, no matter what day it is, you also don't come back. That's what we'll have to explain next time. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should stay safe.